Hello, welcome to an MLEX special audio edition, coming to you from this year's conference of the International Association of Privacy Professionals, or IAPP, here in Washington, D.C. My name is Mike Swift. I'm MLEX's Chief Global Digital Risk Correspondent. And the MLEX team was out in force this year to cover the IAPP Global Privacy Summit 2024 here in Washington. This is a conference that just keeps growing, bringing together thousands of privacy professionals from around the world. And to mark the occasion, we put together this audio recap, which will accompany the publication of our special report from the conference that ran the week of April 1st here in Washington. In just over 10 minutes, I'll bring you the recording of the conversation I had with Australia's newly appointed Privacy Commissioner, Carly Kind. It's her first major press interview, and she touches on some significant issues now facing the country. First up, though, I'm joined by the MLEX Data Privacy team that covered the conference. From our Brussels Bureau, Chief Correspondent Matthew Newman and Correspondent Sam Clark. From our San Francisco office, senior correspondents Amy Miller and Xu Wan, as well as Jen Bryce, a data privacy and security reporter who also covers connected cars and other future mobility issues. Also with us is Claude Marks from FTC Watch, MLEX's sister publication. Claude is a veteran correspondent working out of our DC office. Matthew, let's start with you. What were your highlights?
Thanks, Mike. Hi, it was great to be here, and it's an absolutely jam-packed event, and it's always exciting to meet regulators from all over the world. What I thought was really important was this emphasis on how the IAPP itself is changing and evolving. Initially, when we first started covering these events, we saw that it was just about the GDPR and also the California regulation. Now it's moved on to AI, and it's clear that AI is very important for privacy professionals. So Caitlin Finnessy told us in an interview that they're ramping up to have more privacy professionals become AI officers and AI experts. And those people are going to be in charge of compliance at companies. And the goal is for 10,000 new professionals by the end of the year. And Mike Swift did a story about how they were taking their first tests just this week.
Yep, they're all sharpening up their number two pencils, and they'll find out at the end of the month whether they passed or not. So a little bit like the bar exam, I guess.
Absolutely. And the other thing that I picked up on was data transfers are still a hot topic. That session actually attracted more people than I thought. So Alex Greenstein, who is in charge of data transfers, the new EU-US privacy framework. It's now attracted 2,700 companies. And at the end of the conference, I interviewed the European Data Protection Supervisor, Wojciech Wiborowski, and he told me about how data protection authorities are still concerned about transfers of data from the EU to the US. And so that means cloud service providers, and this is a particular focus for his office because the European Commission was rapped on the knuckles for its use of Microsoft 365. That was an important point for us. And then finally, I had an interview with the head of the EU cybersecurity agency, and he told me how cybersecurity is a growing threat and companies need to invest more to get up to speed and tackle these threats. Amy, what do you think about your time here?
Yeah, it was interesting. I focused on state privacy enforcement, and the sessions were packed when the state privacy regulators were there. Really, it's hard to find a seat in there. There were so many people. And Michael Macko, the head of enforcement for the California Privacy Protection Agency, said companies may be reluctant to engage with regulators, you know, because they're worried anything they say could be used against them in some way, and he gets that. But their willingness to engage actually builds credibility. The agency issued its first privacy enforcement advisory this week, and just reminding companies that they shouldn't be collecting excessive and unnecessary personal information from consumers, and he made it clear that more advisories like that are coming. And state attorneys general from Connecticut and Colorado, whose privacy laws just took effect last year, said they've been pleasantly surprised that businesses have been willing to work with them. Colorado has been sending letters to companies about collecting and processing sensitive data without proper consent. And Connecticut is focused on privacy practices, so it's reviewing privacy policies every day, looking for companies that haven't updated them and broken links, dead end forms, that sort of thing.
You know, that's kind of interesting because I covered a panel on scraping, and that was organized by 14 countries, and they were basically saying that social media companies were very responsive, and so maybe there's a less combative attitude coming with between enforcers and companies. Who knows?
I don't know, but there's been some pushback, I think, from some groups over these state privacy laws. You know, they're too different, they're too confusing, and I think, didn't you cover one of those sessions?
Yeah, I have. This is actually my first time covering IAPP, which is extremely exciting. To follow up on what Amy said about state privacy laws, I think a lot of people know that there is this inconsistency among U.S. state privacy laws, because as someone said, consistency is not a priority for state lawmakers. And because of this inconsistency, there will be some impact potentially on enforcement of these laws. For example, if you are complying with another state's law, what does that mean in a different state? And there doesn't seem to be a clear answer to that question yet, because a lot of these laws are quite new.
Well, the state privacy regulators tried to sort of downplay those issues. They talked about how their priorities are overlapping and how they work together on figuring out what those priorities are going to be. And they're actually, some of them, I was surprised to find out, have been friends for quite some time. So they talk to each other regularly, they know each other, so they're trying to downplay those concerns. But I do remember the Deputy Attorney General from Oregon was making it clear that there are some differences in their state privacy law that they're very proud of, and they want to make sure that people understand those differences. So I think in some ways they want to make some clarity, but they like kind of having some differences that differentiate them. So yeah, I think that's true.
At a federal level, you know, the whole thing is that the U.S. does not have a national data privacy law. CISA's Eric Goldstein was actually talking about this and how the U.S. is working to broker international deals that are broad and principles-based, so that, you know, the U.S. can kind of hopefully streamline how they're working on cybersecurity and privacy, even when the federal government is, quite frankly, not getting it together to have a privacy law at this point, and states are fracturing in how they do it. He put it as a mosaic, and he said that these agreements are at a reasonable level of abstraction, and that is ideally driving some coalescence at the state level and internationally, but it's going to be a challenge because other countries also have these national privacy laws, which makes it a lot harder for the U.S. to compete.
Claude, did you want to?
Yes.
Claude Marks from FTC Watch, who is teaming up with us. What was your take on the conference?
I was struck by the fact that the Federal Trade Commission, which has, of course, dual enforcement over antitrust and consumer protection, they've been very aggressive recently on antitrust and sort of, you know, been not afraid to anger people and sort of ruffle feathers. On the consumer protection side, they've kept a much lower profile with this conference. Yeah. There was only one commissioner there, Rebecca Slaughter, who made a really strong effort to not make news, and she succeeded in this area. She said one thing that they go after executives of companies because, quote, not to be mean about it, but for other purposes or so. I was struck by that, and the other rank and file lawyers who were there were interesting, but they really tried to not make news. One even spent part of her presentation reading from the FTC rule, so it was very. It was very frustrating as a journalist because she was really not making any news.
Yeah, it was really striking how quiet almost absent the FTC was.
Yeah. Nina Khan was there, I think, 2 years ago, but she's not there.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. Yeah. I wonder what's behind that. So
my gut is that they're getting a lot of heat on the antitrust side, so, you know, maybe they see consumer protection as, like, we're for motherhood, apple pie, and data security and protecting kids.
So at MLEX, we really strive to present a international global view, and Sam Clark was our second reporter who came over from Brussels. And what did you note about the conference, Sam?
Yeah, I found that it was more low-key from the European perspective. And by that I mean there's less controversy between the regulators. So the first, I would say, 4 years of the GDPR was really defined by arguments and infighting between the regulators on matters of interpretation, but also how they enforced. And it was an exciting time, but I think it perhaps distracted the regulators. And now, for the last sort of couple of years, and it was emphasized this week, they are sort of moving towards just getting on with things. It feels like a sort of new era. It's been nearly 6 years since the GDPR came into force. And regulators are saying they're busier than ever, but it's more just the bread and butter, getting on with things. They're more happy to openly talk about their enforcement priorities. I noticed that from the Italian regulator, the UK regulator, the Germans, various others sort of in interviews and on panels. They say they're busy. There's lots of interpretation, guidance, opinions, enforcement, case law from the European Court of Justice. This is the stuff that keeps regulators very busy, but is less controversial. Perhaps the key outstanding question in Europe, in terms of the digital economy at least, is this question of pay or consent, which Meta has adopted recently for its Facebook and Instagram services, but was originally used by publishers, which is where users have a choice between paying for a service or consenting to their data being used for advertising. And it's controversial, to say the least. It's going to be the subject of guidance and opinions, and I think it's going to rumble on for a while now. And several regulators told me that that issue, alongside artificial intelligence, obviously, and protecting children, those are some of their key concerns.
And I was really struck by the session that was done by Rohit Chopra yesterday, who is the director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the CFPB, former member of the Federal Trade Commission. And of course, he had to take a pot shot at the FTC under Republican control, saying that their laissez-faire attitude has essentially led us to some of the excesses that we're seeing now in commercial surveillance. But he painted this really kind of frightening, frankly, dystopian view of how, despite the fact that Facebook's virtual currency, Libra, was defeated, that there's this lurching of a melding of big tech and big banking, and presented this scenario of banks may someday soon know so much about you that when you walk into your local bank to ask for a loan or whatever, they know all this information about you. You know, are you having marital problems? Are you late paying the rent? You know, do you have a gambling problem? And they would just, it would just come up on a screen, and the banking employee would know all this stuff about you because of the data that's gathered by connected cars, by wearable devices, by your Apple and Google Pay. They know everything you buy, every place you've been. And that he basically said, this is not what a democratic society and an open economy should be doing, and that it's really critical as regulators that we sort of see the bigger picture in what we're doing, not just finding privacy violations, but really keeping in mind that you need, a democracy needs privacy to function as well. And I thought that was really compelling and scary stuff, actually. So this year, like every year, there were a bunch of new regulators who took the stage. Carly Kind, who is the new Privacy Commissioner for Australia. Anu Talu, who is the new chair of the European Data Protection Board. Ashkan Soltani, who is feeling his oats as the executive director of the California Privacy Protection Agency. Amy, what did you hear from Ashkan?
He made it clear the kid gloves are off. He said companies have had 6 years to prepare for enforcement from the first standalone privacy data protection authority in the U.S., and he's ready to go. He's got some investigative teams that he's hiring, and he's hiring a chief auditor, and they're going to be going into companies and asking them to walk them through their systems. So he's very excited about that.
Matthew, did Talu say anything interesting?
I think that she's getting her feet wet still. She's been there 11 months, almost a year. But she made it clear that the privacy authorities are the best place to direct the enforcement for AI. And that was a theme that we heard throughout the conference. It's very interesting that the Finnish, she's also in charge of the Finnish Ombudsman's Office. She realized that this is a great opportunity for data protection authorities, and they're the best placed simply because they've got the experience dealing with data, and they also know how to conduct investigations and work with other government agencies. So we'll see what the governments decide. They have a year to decide when the AI Act finally goes into force, probably next month.
And a big thank you to all the MLEX team that worked on the IAPP conference. That was Matthew Newman, Sam Clark, Amy Miller, Xu Wan, Jen Bryce, and Claude Marks. And make sure you download our special report from the conference. You'll find the link at mlexmarketinsight.com. That's mlexmarketinsight.com. And coming up, privacy in Australia. Thanks for staying with us. I'm Mike Swift. Australia has just appointed a new privacy commissioner, a position that has remained vacant for nearly 10 years. The appointment of Carly Kine marked a return to the original three-commissioner structure of the Office of the Australian Information Commissioner. The agency now has all commissioners in place: privacy, freedom of information, and information. The information commissioner, Angeline Falk, is also the head of the agency. Carly Kind has had an impressive career since leaving her native Australia in 2008, and she has returned home at a critical time. The country's Privacy Act is undergoing a revamp amid claims that the OAIC doesn't have the tools it needs to address the growing privacy challenges facing the country. I spoke to Kind at the margins of the IAPP, where she was a keynote speaker and did panels with the data protection agencies of Canada, the UK, and other countries. I began by asking her about her presentation for the general session of the conference, which looked at privacy's big picture. Here's what she told me.
Well, if you look at the origin of privacy law, it really does stem back to post-World War II efforts to elaborate different rights for individuals in the hope that horrific events like those which happened during the war would not happen again if we had a stronger legal structure in place. And there was a lot of discussion at the time about what the right to privacy contained, what its purpose was and why it existed and how it should be constructed. And the focus was very much on how you ensure that governments don't acquire too much power over individuals. So that state control element was very much a clear part of the origin of the right to privacy. Over time, that has very much extended out to actors which wield government-like power. So big tech corporations and other large companies, and indeed any company essentially who's able to acquire and use data about individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that harking back to that origin really tells us that information about someone is really core to who they are, and it's really closely linked to their ability to self-determine who they want to be and what they do in life. And anyone who has access to that information can wield that power, and equally enabling individuals to control that information empowers them. So I think that for me, those are the big picture drivers behind privacy. Over time, it's become very much a detailed and technical compliance framework by necessity, because data handling practices are so complicated. And over time, we've also come to realize the collective rights and harms that occur with respect to data, as well as the individual rights and harms. So, for example, the use of data to shape political processes, to inform people's voting preferences, for example, might be hard to trace back to an individual, but is very much a collective concern for society. So I think that is well established in privacy. And then as we move into this new era of AI, I think we're going to see this at an exponential level whereby the kind of volume, scope, size of data processing is just growing exponential. In fact, it's not even exponential, of course, it's far beyond that.
Yeah.
And these new AI systems are in themselves incredibly powerful. We also don't understand them, which makes them even more powerful. And they have the power, the ability to empower individuals as well and to decentralize power in interesting ways. And so we're seeing, for example, industries in which power was centralized in a few actors potentially being disrupted by generative tools. So I think AI is a space in which there is a really interesting power play playing out. And then I think the purpose then of governance is to really think about how we redistribute power, ensure it's applied evenly, whether that be market power in terms of where the concentration of AI infrastructure is in terms of corporate actors, but also workplace power and consumer power and, for example, rate.
By workplace power, maybe the ability to monitor employees, for example.
Exactly, and how you empower employees then to engage with monitoring technologies or automation in their workplace. There are initiatives now to enable employees to use AI themselves. And there are other types of new initiatives emerging to really confront that. It doesn't have to be that AI automatically disempowers workers and empowers employees. I think that can be shaken up. But I think we're seeing this transformation happening in a range of different sectors.
Could you talk about your professional background? I mean, you were the director of the Ada Lovelace Institute in the UK.
That's right.
Did that sort of inform, you know, your thinking that you just sort of went into with the power in AI?
Very much. In fact, my origin is as a human rights lawyer working with the United Nations and then later as an activist at the Privacy International, which is an NGO based in London. So I come very much out of the human rights sphere. At the Ada Lovelace Institute, what we were trying to do was something quite different, which is rather than starting from a human rights viewpoint, starting from a viewpoint of asking how innovation can best serve society and best serve people. And so we were trying to put in place kind of pragmatic interventions that really brought voices of people to the table in conversations around data and AI. So we did a lot of public deliberation work. I spent a lot of time engaging with communities to ask them, what do they want out of AI? What do they want out of new technology? So that's very much informed, I think, as I move into the regulatory space, thinking about the purpose of regulation, what's the outcome we're trying to achieve here? And for me, it's about consumer rights, citizens' rights, ensuring that they're able to use and enjoy technology to the best and fullest of their abilities, while not having to compromise their personal data or privacy rights.
Do you expect to take a more public role than the agency has had in the past?
Right. So Angeline is the Information Commissioner. Angeline Falk is the Information Commissioner, and she also acted as Privacy Commissioner from a recent year. So we did officially have someone in the role. They were performing two roles. But yes, it's true that this is the first time we've had three commissioners in the three separate roles. I hope that it means that for the Australian public, they can have a very visible face and name to put to privacy issues. And that's one thing that I certainly am endeavouring to do in this new role. But also that the office can really exercise its functions to the fullest now it's properly equipped with the right expertise and the right leadership.
How do you expect to do that? It sounds like you really expect to take a public role in doing that.
I hope so. I think there's a big education piece that we can be doing. And I don't mean educating the public about how they should protect their own privacy, but rather I mean helping people understand what regulation exists out there, how it can best be used. Engaging with regulated entities so that they understand what compliance looks like, but also being there to take action when there are problematic practices, when issues rise to the fore. You may know, Mike, in recent years, we've had a range of data breaches in Australia at a very large scale. So we really want to be out there on the front foot, ensuring compliance before those problems arise, but also sending a strong message that when non-compliance is serious and repeated, that we will take action.
The Privacy Act is being revamped at present. How does that fit into your role?
So we are a stakeholder in that process. We provide our own expertise and input to the Attorney General's Department as they develop that new legislation and have done for a very long time. Many, many of our recommendations have been agreed or agreed in principle by the government. So we're really pleased to see that almost everything that we'd like to have seen in the legislation, the Attorney General has indicated that they intend to take forward in some form or another. So we'll continue to support that process from the outside. Once the legislation is adopted, and that will happen in time, we hope, we have a very big role to play, including in developing guidance for the implementation of the new legislation. There may be a number of codes prescribed under the legislation that we all need to develop and then administer. Where presently, the proposals include greater enforcement powers for the organisation, as well as a new threshold test for the processing of data, which is around fair and reasonable, and that will be a novel threshold test, both in Australia and potentially worldwide. So there'll be a lot of work to go into what that looks like and providing advice to regulated entities about how they can ensure compliance.
Right. Yesterday in your keynote, I thought I heard you, I'm not sure you actually supported the call for a separate AI regulator, but you recognize that they're having calls in civil society, and it sounds like that is something that should be thought through.
I think what I was trying to explain yesterday is that civil society calls for that kind of entity out of a desire to see clear investment in AI as an issue and a clear pathway for citizens and consumers to bring their complaints to the fore. I think that there are many ways that we could recognize that need that don't involve a new AI regulator. So I'm not putting my support behind that as an institutional solution, but I take the underlying motivation to heart, which is people feel that this is a big, scary new technology, and entities also feel that this is a big new change that they're having to grapple with. And I think we need to be very clear about the ways in which it's covered by existing regulation and ensure there's no gaps. And I think that was the point that I made at the end, which is regulatory overlap is less damaging for individuals and consumers than regulatory gaps. And I think that's the thing we need to try to avoid.
That was Carly Kind, Australia's newly appointed privacy commissioner. And you can read the feature article that we wrote about the commissioner as part of our special report, wrapping up all of our IAPP coverage. Just go to mlexmarketinsight.com. And that's it for this special audio edition. The program was produced by James Panicki and presented by me, Mike Swift, MLEX's Chief Global Digital Risk Correspondent. For everyone here at MLEX and LexisNexis, thanks for your company, and goodbye for now.